You're listening to the Wedding People podcast, hosted by Rhianna Elizabeth and Rebecca Brennan Brown.
On this podcast, we talk about all things wedding. So if you're getting married and want to know wedding planner secrets, this is the show for you.
In this podcast, we may say the odd naughty word. So if you don't want to hear us dropping the F-bomb, we suggest that you listen to us later.
You can find more helpful information and show notes at www.theweddingpeoplepodcast.com. We hope you enjoy today's episode. What would you like to talk about today, Rhianna?
Today, I would like to talk to Catherine Hudson from House of Hud / Arabian Tent Company regarding marquee weddings. Hi, Catherine.
Hi, Rhianna. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
We have lots of lovely things to talk about today.
I think marquee weddings are considered a bit of a minefield. So I think this is going to be a very, very useful episode for a lot of people.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can find it overwhelming because at the end of the day, you're practically building a venue from the ground up and you have to think about the elements that go with that. A lot of elements a lot of people forget. And Catherine, who has years of experience and also runs Wonderland, is going to help us with the tips and tricks and advice that she's learned over the years, which could help you.
Absolutely. That's what I'm here for.
So first of all, tell us a bit about you, Catherine.
I'll tell you how I got into this, which is, you know, as all best things, I stumbled into it. I've been doing this pretty much for 20 years, all my working life, aside from a couple of years as a PA. And I started off by looking for a tent or marquee to have put on a party. And because I had lots of creative friends who were artists and musicians, I was sort of looking for something that might be the reflect the fact we're going to have some live music and do art inside it. And I couldn't find anything back in the sort of early noughties, flicking through the yellow pages, that wasn't a white plastic box. Mm-hmm. And it was page upon page upon page of the same thing. And having been to a couple of low-key festivals and seen some more interesting Pakistani tents or hippie style tents, I realised that they did exist, but they certainly weren't being offered to me. So that was the beginning seed of the idea, when I realised that people must be like me, wanting something that was a bit more creative, colourful and fun. So I fell into it young, and really it's kind of perfect for me because I'm an interesting combination of being a visual perfectionist. I'm one of those annoying people that notices everything that's wrong with something. I'm a tomboy, so I love getting out there, lugging stuff around, driving vans and trucks and putting up tents. And I love partying. If I'm not planning a party, I'm at a party or festival. And so I'm sort of, this is what I live and breathe. So, it's very well suited to everything that I can bring to it.
That sounds like so much fun.
It is.
So much fun.
It is. No, it's great. And I sort of fell into having a venue as well. So I've been running the Arabian Tent Company for 15 years now, although I had a stint before that of running cafes at festivals, which is where I sort of entered. But I now run a venue because 4 years ago, I moved to a lovely house on a beautiful piece of land in West Sussex, and never really planned to, but realised that I didn't have anywhere to host my friends for our weekend gatherings that I like to have, and so ended up converting the barn next door to our house into a kind of five bedroom guest house, and then put up a dome tent because I found one at the glamping show and thought it looked really fun next to the lake. And then found a tiny house, which I also thought looked really sweet, and was thinking about maybe having my office in it, but then thought, actually, no, what a cute place for people to come and stay. So ended up realising that I can host 20 people in the accommodation, and given that a lake's really rather a lovely backdrop and I have a field, then it sort of made sense to offer this to you as weddings, wedding venue too.
So it's worth noting that I met Catherine by finding Wonderland on Coco Wedding Venues for one of my clients, and we've actually confirmed the venue. And I've been there and fell in love with it the week we arrived, I took my beautiful couple there, and we just knew instantly that this was the place. Like, there's so much going on, and it's so different and so versatile and flexible compared to so many other places. You've, like you said, you've got the accommodation, you've got the ground space for glamping and marquee, you've got the annex, you've got everything there for you.
Party barn.
Which was the little hidden gem, because we saw this all these gorgeous things, and then we walked into the barn and it was just decorated with all these beautiful silks and linings and Arabian inspired decor. And we were like, wow, this place is pretty cool.
So the great thing about the party barn is that it's also a showroom. So all the decoration that you saw then, it's seven different interiors that we use for the frame tents for the Arabian Tent Company. So when we're not partying in it, it then becomes somewhere where clients who want to see exactly what colour something is, or try out the furniture, or see what type of lighting we have. They come and visit that to see a sample of what we can provide. So it's a really efficient use of space, as well as being a really fun thing to walk into.
Exactly. So when it comes to marquee weddings, what do you think are the key elements that you need to think about? So if someone's like, right, I don't want a traditional wedding venue, I want to build my venue, where would they start?
Right, well, I mean, they start really with the land. I sometimes get inquiries from people who say, who sort of assume as a marquee company you're going to have somewhere to put it. You're not. You're a marquee company, you provide structures. So the number one thing is to find where you're going to put the marquee. If you're lucky enough to have a big garden, you could put it there, or a parent's garden, or even a family friend might have space, a field that you could use. Otherwise, think about what you want from the venue. So sometimes people want accommodation, so they can put people up, or they want facilities such as power or toilets or water / catering facilities. Mm-hmm. So just think about, because the more your venue has already on site, the less you'll have to bring in. So it might be a bit of a cost benefit analysis to think about, right, well, a generator is going to cost us up to, say, $1,000-$1,500. Water bowser, if we have to bring that into an empty field, that's going to be X amount. And sort of add up toilets, what you'd be paying, and think, well, this could be my, if I can find a venue with all these amenities, then I'll be saving X amount from my total bill. Therefore, I could put that into the venue. That could be one way of looking at it. Or you may just want to look for the most beautiful piece of land, or a place, perhaps there's a location that's special to you and your partner that you want to find. So it's those sort of questions. Some people want a stately home backdrop, even if quite a lot of stately homes don't actually let you use the inside facilities. It's just more there to be a background for your day. So it's thinking about where would it be put first?
I think it's fair to say that I would assume that many people would think, okay, want a marquee wedding, let's find a field, pop it in there. But like you just said, you've got to think about mains water, if they've got the water there, if you have to bring that in, if you have to bring in the if you have to bring in catering distribution and power and all of those things. So it's not just a case, like you said, of plonking a tent in a field. And you have to think toilets. You have to think about the weather. You know, there's lots of things you have to think about.
Yeah, parking, exactly. Lighting the car park from where the main marquee will be. You do. You have to sort of think practically. Walk your way. Whenever I turn up to a site, I'm always thinking, right, what will clients see? Well, if I'm a guest, where am I going to park? Where am I going to walk to? What's the ground like? Is it muddy? Is it undulating? Do I need a pathway? Do I need lighting to get there? When I actually arrive at the main marquee, I'll be going in, right, there needs to be power, there needs to be a catering tent behind it. Where are the toilets? You don't really want to see them, but you also don't want to know where they are. So do you sort of tuck them round but have a little sign, or do you put them behind a hedge out of the way? It's just sort of walking through and thinking, what do people need? Where will it go? How much will it cost? And sort of building up a picture of it like that.
Yeah, no, that makes complete sense. And I suppose when you talk about it like that, it can seem overwhelming. But I guess you can, like you said, you can find spaces that are a lot more set up for hosting marquees, rather than just, you don't just have to pick a field. You can find somewhere that's got the water,
hard standing.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, that's true. You do. There are a few websites out there now that do have people put their land onto these sites that, because they are set there, they're into hiring them out for events, and they'll quite often have the hard standing, the water, not always the power. That's one thing that generally you won't find, and you will still need a generator. Mm-hmm. But yeah, certainly hard standing, good access and power are things that people often have.
So in regards to marquee types, what are the different types of structures, and what are really the most popular when it comes to weddings?
So, different types of marquee structures. Now, this is a really good topic, because we do now, unlike when I started and there were just pages and pages of white boxes, we do now have a lot of different types of structure on the market available for clients to use. And depending on the practicality, the way you want to use the space inside and out, and the aesthetic of it, you will direct which type of tent that you want. So, I mean, what do you want it to look like? Is it important to you to have a beautiful structure from the outside? So when people first look at it, does it need to look good, as well as inside? Because making tents look good inside, you can do. Making them look good outside, you sort of need to start with a good looking structure. And so, I mean, personally, I would say that clear spans are not that aesthetically pleasing. They are the white boxes. They're quite housey looking. Mm. They're not very elegant. Something like a pole tent is a beautiful structure. They're often canvas. They have wooden poles around the edge with finials on the top and finials on the roof, and you can put festoon lighting on them. That they can look really lovely. But if you like that, you just need to be aware you'll be dealing with centre poles. So every 6 metres or so, you'll probably have a large pole in the middle, which might mean that you have to change the way you use a space. Stretch tents, they also look interesting, and they're brilliant for putting over gardens or spaces that are undulating, not flat, or have small bushes or trees that you want to incorporate within the tent. They're pretty much the one that does that the best, I would say. However, you will find it difficult to wall it sufficiently so that you could actually use it say in April or October onwards, because it's always going to be, you're going to be battling.
Exposed. Even, yeah,
it is exposed. Yeah, you can't really wall them well. So, you need to bear that in mind. But yeah, the pole thing's quite a key one, and also weight loading. So, I mean, obviously Pinterest is our friend when we're planning a wedding, and there are lots of inspiring images there that you can go, oh, I love that, I want to recreate that. But then if your marquee is a pole tent, you're probably not going to have as much ability to hang heavy weights, i.e. plants, ladders, lighting installations from the ceiling, than if you were using a clear span, which is a metal structure with high weight loading capacity on it. So it's that you sort of need to think about, well, aesthetics and then practicality again, really. And be willing to compromise. So, like with everything, you'll be, how much does it mean to you to have it looking amazing and dripping with foliage inside might mean that you can't do it in a pole tent, because also in a pole tent, you've only really got the centre poles to attach to, and then a bit of weight you can have coming from a couple of points in the ceiling, whereas with a clear span you can put a truss in, which is like a metal frame attached to the metal frame of the structure, and from there you can then widen your reach of hanging items and objects and lighting and create a lot fuller look. So yeah, it's sort of thinking about what's really important to you, what's top priority, and then going back from there as to what would be the most practical structure.
Yeah, because I would say that obviously if you have the budget to be able to dress the external part of the marquee, great. Mm-hmm. But realistically, if you're on a tighter budget, it makes sense to utilise the budget within the structure itself, because they're going to be in there longer and they're only going to walk up quite... Obviously, if you've got the budget to do everything, great. But for being, you know, economical would be to focus on the inside and go for something like that, I would say. And then again, you've got the yurts. Do you own yurts, Catherine?
I don't own yurts, but I know about yurts. Yurts, absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, the different structures we've got that are mainly on the market now are yurts, teepees, stretch tents, pole tents, clear spans. Yeah, those are the main ones that are clear
spans, the clear tops and clear sides.
Clear span actually just refers to its internal space, and that it's a clear span with no poles in it. But you're right in that they can have clear roofs, those structures. You won't get a pole tent with a clear roof or a yurt with a clear roof that I've come across. But yeah, they can have the clear roofs. But all structures can have clear sides.
Right.
Okay.
As a look, the clear tops on marquees.
Yeah,
it's a very popular look.
It's a very popular. I'm sort of in two minds about it, because during the summer, if it's hot, it is like a greenhouse in there.
Oh my gosh, I did one in Paris, and oh my gosh, this was actually a glass frame structure. Oh my god, they're so hot.
Yeah, they are, exactly. So but they look lovely. But the other thing I would say, actually, is that they're often not glass. They're much more usually are the same plastic PVC material that's used for the walls.
Yes.
And I've had the experience where I used one of those last year for a wedding. And the thing is, on Pinterest and in images, yes, it looks amazing. But when it goes up and you realise that actually it is plastic and it does look shiny, and there's maybe a little bit of white misting that you tend to get from PVC in patches, and perhaps you can see a scratch. I had a client that actually said, I don't want it. I want one of your pole tents. Because when she saw it in real life, rather than on a Pinterest board, it didn't quite live up to her expectations. Yeah. And I think that for that reason, one of the things that I would highly recommend when you are planning a marquee wedding is go and see the structure that you like the look of, because the different lights in pictures or Photoshop, let's be honest, can mean that what you're getting may not look like the dream image that you've pinned.
Yeah, I've had an experience of that just from doing a wedding show. I did a wedding fair once that was in a teepee type structure, and I hadn't been there beforehand. So I designed this amazing stand that I put so much money and time and effort into, and the light, it was tipping it down with rain, so it was so dark inside, and they just hadn't put enough lighting, and it was just a total waste. And I remember being so disappointed. And when you think about it, you would never book your venue without seeing it.
No, so
you would make total sense.
Yeah, exactly. It does. Bear in mind, having that said, so we don't put our canvas tents, i.e. the Dana pearl tent or the oyster pearl tent, the pole tent, up during the winter, because if you think about how much wetter the ground gets, we don't want to have all the unnecessary pressure washing, cleaning, reproofing to have to do to our canvas structures. So you may need to wait for April/May to actually view the tent, which is why planning in advance is a good idea, planning at least a year in advance, because then you've got the time to be able to visit different tents, perhaps even when they're being used for a real wedding. That's the best way to see things. How is that company, not when they're doing their open day, but when they're actually doing an event for somebody else, try and come along to one of those, because then you really get to see what they deliver.
I'm doing a wedding in Italy at the moment, and they have it's in Como, and because of the weather and they have their own like climate over there, we have to have a wet weather option of a marquee, and we're having clear top. And they also listed in the breakdown that you could have them relined.
Oh, well, interesting. I mean, I've not really heard about it with linings, but I've heard about it with things like clear walls.
Maybe that's what they were meaning, because it was in Italian. Oh,
no, do you know what? No, I know what they meant. It would have been to have a brand new, the plastic bits.
Yeah.
That's what they were talking about, because when you've used them even really a couple of times, the clear roofs do get a little bit scratched and wobbly looking. That's what they will have been referring to. Do you want a brand new plastic?
So you can, if you had budget, buy
you can.
Brand new plastic, like outer, I don't know what you're calling this, like frame.
Yeah. Well, no, it's PVC. It's
PVC. New PVC. Yeah. There we go. Let's go with that.
You could have new BBC. I mean, I'm on a sustainability drive this year, given that I think that we can no longer ignore what's going on around us. And it's down to all of us to think responsibly about what our actions generate when it comes to carbon and waste. So personally, I would see that as a bit wasteful to have a new plastic PVC, which what's going to happen to the old one? Landfill. So I wouldn't be so into that.
That's a really good point. Really, really good. This is the thing, like we very much pushing sustainability and being aware of what you're using on the podcast in general. And we said that the events and wedding industry is so wasteful for things like that. And you've just made a massive point in saying that, of course, you can have a PVC tent. But if you're looking to have an eco-friendly wedding, that's not an eco-friendly option.
No, it's not. Exactly. Yeah.
So in regards to capacities and sizes, what would you say is the most standard size for working with probably 80 to 120 guests, which I would say is our usual kind of bracket we work with?
Yep, perfect. So I just know this stuff now because I've been doing it so long. But it's so for 80 to 100, you would want a 12 metre by 18 metre structure, because within that, you will be able to use half of the space to dine your guests. Mm-hmm. So 120, you wouldn't want any more really than that. 100 to 120, perfect. 80, probably a little bit on the spacious side, but still doable. So you'd half the space for dining and half the space for your milling, dance floor, bar, lounge.
Fine. So we're doing a wedding with each other this year, and we've got the ceremony, the reception, the dinner and the evening taking place in one place. Obviously you've got the party barn on your site. But for people who want to do the whole thing on a ground space, how would the marquee then be split up? So obviously thinking and hoping that weather is kind, I'm guessing you could do an outdoor ceremony or use a stretch tent and then move inside?
Yes. So I'm not a huge fan of ceremony tents, actually, just because I think they are a bit of a waste of money. And they also then stand there whilst you're usually looking at them from the main tent with nothing going on in them whatsoever, looking a little bit sorry for themselves. And then they're dark in the evening when everything's bright. So, yeah, I'm not a huge fan. I would try, if possible, because partly it's more efficient with cost, and also it just means that people feel the love that you've put into it all the time in having a ceremony area within the main tent. So for example, with the tap tent I just told you, the 12 by 18 meter size, which gives you 215 roughly meters of square space, I would, if for a party of 100 or 80, you would be able to get a ceremony in there, because you could use, for example, the stage to put your couple on for the ceremony. You can cover over the dance floor, which would be in front of it, with rugs or with a carpet. You could use the chairs that you're using for your dining around it, and there'd be enough room in there to sit theatre style looking at the stage, 80 to 100 people. You'd have to go a bit bigger for 120, because you're on your capacity really when it comes to comfortable space. So you'd want to extend it by another 6 meters, but again, you're only extending it by 6 by 12 meters, not by what you'd need, which is 12 by 12 if you were going to have that with a freestanding structure. It's sort of overlapping your uses a bit, if you know what I mean.
fine. I've been to events before myself when they have the dinner in one space and they have the other section screened off. So you can also talk about putting partitions up, curtains.
Yep.
I've been to something with a kabuki drop. That's very dramatic and very expensive. But there's also ways of sectioning out the marquee so it's not just open. You can break it up, can't you?
You can. And actually, back to the different types of structure, some structures will be better at that than others. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you have set your heart on having a reveal curtain leading to a nightclub area afterwards, it's going to be best. A clear span is going to enable you to do that. A pole tent, you can't put a screen up because if you imagine you've just got fabric hanging from the ceiling. Mm-hmm. Clear span, you could do that. Aldana pearl, you can do that. You can't do that in a stretch tent either. Yurt, you could put another yurt on, but it would be a separate structure. That was another pros and cons. Some people do want that, and that works really nice, really nicely. It adds another chapter or level to the evening to lead people through to a new space. I like that. That's how it works at Wonderland with the party barn. So after people have eaten, it's time to kick up the energy into the party time, and then you move through into the party barn, which gives you a completely different environment and therefore vibe in which to do that.
They are very versatile. That is the advantage. You know, obviously sometimes at venues you've got restrictions and things that you have to do, people that you have to use. But with marquees, it's a lot more flexible. In regards to setup time, this is something I think that people often forget, is that you need to allow, if the structure's not already there, you need to allow for build and de-rig, which can obviously increase cost if you have to hire the space longer. Usually, I would say that marquee spaces, they do allow for a setup and de-rig time. But if not, what are you usually looking at?
So you're looking at really a minimum of a day to mm-hmm. build a marquee. So because you're building the venue, so to floor, light, line and furnish it, you're looking at a full day. So for example, when we are doing weddings at that's not at a venue, because they tend to be slightly tighter on time, we prefer to set up earlier. Say if it's your mum or dad's garden, it would be setting up on a Wednesday to then ideally furnish on a Thursday. So you're then your florists, caterers and anyone else doing production can come in on a Friday, and it just manages and stages it so it's not, everything's not happening at once. I always think it's quite nice for couples or people who are having marquees built in their gardens or where they're having them, just to be able to sit with them for a day, to get to know them, to sort of do their own decoration, so that it doesn't feel like a whirlwind of having it up, having the wedding and then taking it down. It's just so quick. So that's what I would say. A minimum of a day for a build for a marquee.
And when it comes to after like the build, like the general build itself, you can choose things like carpets, flooring and lighting and all of those kind of, I would say that at the moment, a massive trend is the kind of fairy light and chandelier look. Mm-hmm. But obviously I'm guessing that with the carpet and the flooring, that can then get quite expensive. So is there usually a standard carpet and floor that goes down?
Yeah, so with marquees, we would never send a marquee out without flooring, lighting and lining. Those are three basic things I think you need to create a venue, and then you put the things in. So you'd be thinking about the carpeting and flooring right at the beginning, actually, when you're thinking about where you're putting your marquee. If you've got a flat, level, well-drained ground, the standard marquee flooring is coir, which is a coconut woven matting from, in fact, the husks of coconuts, which has been in recent years surpassed by some product called Dandidura, which is also a woven product, but it's woven with polyurethane. So it is lighter, thinner, and you can clean it better than coir. But it's essentially a sort of seagrass looking material that you lay over a tarpaulin, which is nailed into the ground. If if you don't have firm, flat, level, well-drained ground, and say it pools a bit or it's a bit undulating, or you just want to have a solid surface, which some people do underfoot when they walk in, then the next sort of grade up, if you like, is a hard floor. And they're either wooden, they jigsaw together, or made of plastic, and then you carpet over that. I've not found any nice looking wooden floors that are just wooden floors that you can lay down as they are yet, but I can imagine that would look great. But so you lay this plastic or wooden floor, and then you put a carpet over it. Now, carpet isn't particularly eco-friendly. They do apparently recycle it, and I need to look further into what they actually do with the recycling of carpet. But it will be more expensive, the hard floor, because, for example, when we deliver a hard floor, it takes a truck, and it takes an entire team to load the truck and then unload the truck and then brand new carpet each time, and then we have to pay for it to be recycled afterwards. So that there's, rather than just having rolls of a malleable material that you roll out and then clean afterwards and put back in the warehouse, it's a bit more involved, a hard floor and carpet. And then if you've got a slope or serious undulations with your ground, then you might need to either use a staging system or a scaffolding. So actually, just, you know, scaffolding companies can be cheaper actually than staging companies, but you're starting to get into quite a lot of money when you need to level the ground. And
I've been in that situation. I did one in Italy, and basically it was a courtyard and it was absolutely not level, and it really did bump the costs up.
Yes, it does, by thousands. Yes. So actually, what I often say, again, this is why it's great to plan in advance, if it's your own land, and then do a cost benefit analysis, because you're going to be spending probably a minimum of £3,000 on hiring in staging / scaffolding to level the space. Yeah. You might be able to put that into leveling it with diggers and reseeding it, because that probably won't be as much as, and then you'll have it forever flat. So it's worth thinking about. I always say, when people say, oh, we've got a field and it's a bit on a bit of a slope, but there's a flat bit, I say, we'll use the flat bit, because it makes so much more practical sense to use the flat bit for them.
Yeah, I remember I was in Florence, actually. I was doing a birthday party at a client's house, a villa, and they had a very old huge pond, and we built rigging and built over the pond, because you can see marquees are built over swimming pools, and
yep,
sometimes they have the glass bottom so that you can see underneath. There's so much you can do with them. You can tailor it, really, if you've obviously got the budget. That's not cheap. No. But you know, we're looking at how we can make it effective for everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In regards to weather,
yes,
obviously being in the UK, but you also have to think about heat, the cold. How would you prepare for the elements?
Well, I mean, I sort of naturally prepare for the elements when I'm sort of designing the space that you need. So like I said, that it's more cost efficient, and I prefer to incorporate the ceremony area within the main marquee. I would always make sure there's enough space in the bar, milling, dance, lounge part of the tent to be able to stand everyone should it be inclement weather, because I think that what you don't want when you're getting married is to have stress and to have question marks and thoughts about, oh, is it going to be nice weather, or I'll wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and check what if the weather forecast has changed because it's going to rain on and I've got my ceremony outside. Do yourself a favor and have a wet weather plan and a dry weather plan, and try and make them as similar as possible so that you don't have to change everything about the way you're conceptualizing and imagining your day to pan out at the last minute, because that just sounds like stress to me.
Yeah, we had aircon units brought in Italy, and they actually started leaking. And then obviously trying to liaise with someone when I speak English and they speak Italian was quite fun, but you have to think about the heat. And obviously, if you are, like you said, with the clear top marquees, it can get very hot. So having air conditioning units. Is that what you would bring in?
Do you know what? I have never had to bring in an air conditioning unit ever. I don't know if it's just because of our structures. I've been asked about it, usually by Arabs in the summer, who are worried about this. But our canvas tents breathe, and our PVC ones that are patio 500 material, they don't let UV light in, so they don't get really hot. So actually I don't have much experience on the air conditioning. Heating, yes. I would say that even in summer, when it's lovely weather, you know, 30 degrees outside, once the sun goes away and the temperature will drop, but if you're going to party past, say, midnight, you will definitely need a heater. Mm-hmm. And I would say that really it's one of those things, a bit like when the booze runs out or the music turns off, people being cold is such a killer for parties.
It really is. It makes me very grumpy.
Yeah, it is. Just for the price of having a heater on standby, set with its thermostat to say, you know, 23 degrees, so that if the temperature inside the tent drops below that, it comes in automatically, that is going to keep your guests comfortable and your party going, and it's worth it.
Completely.
Yeah.
So moving on to the one thing that I know all of our listeners like to know about is costs.
Yes.
So realistically, cost expectations for the kind of marquee size that you were talking about and 80 to 120 guests, is there kind of like a ballpark area that you would say that the standard marquee costs come in at, with being furnished with everything inside it?
Yes, I suppose there is a ballpark. So just to be, you know, just to be open, we would be on the higher side of that ballpark. But I would say that for, let's say, 120, between 8 and 15 would be your ballpark amount.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit difficult, because obviously we always try to be as transparent as possible, but it's a bit like how long is a piece of string, because when someone says how much is a wedding cake, it's like, well, you can get a wedding cake for 150, or you can get one for 1,500.
Exactly.
So it's really difficult to discuss that, but it's also worth noting kind of where you're looking at in a kind of ballpark way.
Yes, absolutely. It is. And I suppose that's why it's a bit of a wide ballpark, 8 to 15. It's quite wide. But you might be able to find a company that has got a pole tent that they've been hiring out for 30 years and is quite no frills, but still looks nice for very little. And you might just have to do extra research. And I suppose actually this sort of, because I know you've asked me before, is it cheaper to have a marquee wedding than a wedding in a venue? And I would say actually no, it's not. It's probably going to be more expensive. It's going to be more expensive and more effort. However, what you will gain from that is creative control over your environment, and also the ability to have individuality for your wedding, because you'll be able to determine each item in it, and you'll probably become an expert in it. You'll know all the chair names, and you'll know all the different types of dance floors you can get, and you'll get all the lingo. But it does require thinking through and research, and probably setting a budget too, because otherwise you'll get carried away with it.
Yeah, I can imagine. I think, like you said, like the linings, with us, we tend to kind of say, this is what we think will work, and then give in upgrades, and which is exactly what you've done for us, because you've kind of got this great package, and then you've given us all these options of this furniture, A, B, or C. And, you know, A being the most cost effective, C being the most expensive. And it might be a case of that you select, oh, I'd like to upgrade my bar structure, my bar. But I want to save money on my chairs, so I'll just stick to the usual standard chairs rather than bringing in something extra fancy. So it's, like you said, it's playing around with it. And rather than seeing it as just, oh, this is a package, that's it, go, you can adapt that package to make sure it fits what your budget and expectations are.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
And I would say, like you've just said there, of you being at the kind of higher end of it, a lot of different companies offer a lot of different things as well. So if you're inquiring, don't inquire at one, I guess is what I'm saying. If you're inquiring at one and you're not finding what it is that you're looking for, it's not like, it's like everything else in the world, everyone offers something different.
No, so exactly.
One company might be more flexible.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, note the response time, note how helpful they are to start with when you first make contact, because if they're not being massively helpful to start with, they probably aren't going to be the week leading up to your wedding when it's, you know, everything's on top of you. So, different people work in different ways and have different offerings. So yeah. It is a good idea. I mean, I think lots of, you know, you mentioned earlier Coco Weddings. Mm. I love Coco Weddings. I think Emma's done a fantastic job of curating the offerings. It's beautifully presented, really easy for people to use, and actually with websites like that that curate venues in one place, it's very, very easy for people to just click and send a message, a message to multiple suppliers, and, you know, really then just wait for the flurry of responses to come in.
Yeah. That's where I found Farbridge, my wedding venue, was on Coco, because there's obviously, we don't know every single venue in the UK. And I was just scrolling through, and I completely agree with you. I think it's so well done and very easy to navigate. It's my favourite venue searching website. And it's actually where I found you, Kathy.
Yes, so indeed.
It was funny because I actually inquired with you separately, but I'd also inquired. It was weird how that had overlapped. Because I was like, hi, I need to look at your tents. And you were like, actually, I have a venue. And I was like, oh, okay, that'll work.
Yeah, I know. It was destiny, wasn't it, really?
It was.
You know, it was all pointing to me. You couldn't really get away from me.
So in regards to, there's one thing I want to talk about, which I think is incredibly important when it's, and I'm going to go back to the toilet talk.
Oh, yeah.
Having portaloos or luxury guest units, because festival toilets, portaloos are very different to what you can have at your wedding, and they're not actually extortionate, because you think, oh my gosh, there's so much money, but I think they're a very good investment, is investing in nice toilets.
Yes, a lot of people feel the same about toilets. Well, most people will have a toilet trailer. There are very few people, in fact, I don't think I've ever known anyone having the builder style toilets that you get at festivals at their wedding. But the ones where you walk up steps to get to the men's unit, which has usually got one or two actual toilets and then some urinals in it. Mm. And then the other door will lead to the ladies, which would usually have two or three toilets in it. That's the standard one. In the last few years, you can now get clear flush toilets, so they feel more like your loo at home, which has got water rather than the blue chemical, which can splash and does not smell great. So you can now get clear flush, and you can also get the latest innovation, which is vacuum flush. Those are the most standard. You can also now get toilets that look like shepherd's huts, gypsy caravans, potting sheds, which I really like, because I think it's great when you can make an eyesore into a feature.
I agree.
And so rather than people usually going, oh, we've got hide toilets, where can we put them out the way, hide them around the corner, you can just put them near the entrance, so people go, oh right, that's a nice looking toilet, and then off they go, not really thinking, oh, that's a great big white green block box. So you can have those loos. And the other toilets you can get, which are, we find, are more popular with the high-end clients because they are quite expensive, are the built-in toilets, which also clear flush, but they are at ground level, and you would need, as a marquee company, we would normally provide something about 6x9 to put them in, with a hard floor, and then they get forklifted on into the marquee and then built with partitions, vanity units. I mean, they look like you're in a hotel. They're lovely to be.
I did one in Paris, and oh my gosh, it was seeing the guy bring the toilet in and bring it off on the it's quite an impressive
operation.
I think, as obviously you've got those different options. And if you do have the budget, I think something that's nice to have is a toilet attendant.
Oh, actually, do you know what I was going to say? That I would say it's not really even nice to have. I would actually say if you're tall, you can spend £150, which is probably all it's going to be for a 10-hour shift of somebody to be around to make sure that there's no loo paper all over the floor so that women come out with it on their shoes, and that there's always loo paper topped up, and that if there's one that isn't flushing properly, they sort it out. A toilet attendant is a my top recommendation.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I do think I've been to many marquee weddings myself as a guest, and not many times do they have a toilet attendant, and you get like the wet paper on the floor. And I think maybe that people feel that it's quite expensive to have a staff member on, but it actually can be very cost effective.
Absolutely.
Like you said, £150 for 10-hour shift to make sure you've got toilet paper there, you know, soap's not everywhere. It's not a lot of money to make something a lot more comfortable.
Exactly. It really is. And also think about if there's nobody looking after that, things do go wrong with loos. Like sometimes the pumps stop or someone puts too much paper in, and who's going to be telling, it's going to be you and that gets that message. And then that stress to add to your day.
Yeah.
It's far better to have an attendant to look after all that for you. Or at least if one loo gets blocked and they say, please don't use this loo when people come in. It just keeps it nicer. It's just much more civilised.
Most of the time, though, you think, I don't want to pay for a staff member to do that. When you're paying for a venue, you know, sometimes you're paying for the service, or you're paying for the service included in that fee price. So you're paying for those staff members anyway.
Yeah,
so that's right. You should have to think about that when you're, it's like a parking attendant. If you've got a lot of guests and you've got a big car park space being used, and car park attendant, I think, is an essential as well when you've got lots of cars going in, because someone can block someone in, it can get ugly. I've even done valet parking before. There's all these little things that have to be taken into consideration. If you can't afford a parking attendant, ensuring clear signage everywhere, I think, is incredibly important for marquee weddings.
Yes, I would absolutely agree with you on that. Yeah, and I do also agree with the parking thing. Unless you're, say, using a field and, if you're using a field and it's obvious that you have to park along the hedge line. But obviously at Wonderland, I actually put on a fluorescent jacket, and myself and my daughter get people parking, because you'd be amazed at how ridiculous people, how much space they leave when it's clear there's not that much room, or how they stick out. And, you know, so, yeah, but it's a good idea for sure.
Yeah, and it is a thing, you know, English people can't park. It's just
Really,
that's official. You literally just abandon the car. That's it, we're done. Bye.
Yeah,
and then you end up locking five other people in. So I agree. Toilet attendant and parking attendant, I think, is very, very useful to have.
Absolutely. I would be on that. Yeah.
And one of my last points was music and alcohol licensing, which I think is an interesting one. And I'm not sure, because I know that there's some rules here, aren't there, with music and alcohol licensing?
There are indeed, but it depends on what level the venue that you're using, because it will be a venue. If you're having it at home, that won't be a question mark at all. It's only if you do multiple events. So actually at Wonderland, we only do six. And so we're well under what your sort of level is to have to worry about that kind of thing. So what I would say is your venue will know all about that when it comes to licensing, because they will have a license that limits certain elements, either music or alcohol purchasing. So, I mean, actually with the alcohol, it's sort of worth noting that, because if you do have a venue that has got an alcohol license and wants to be charging you for the alcohol you're consuming, if you don't want to buy their alcohol, they will charge you corkage. If you go for a venue like Wonderland that doesn't have to worry about that, then they won't charge you corkage, because they're not going to be losing out on the money they would be making from that if they were charging for the booze.
I see. Yeah, my venue are not charging corkage at all, which I think is amazing.
Right.
Yeah, and not many people do. It's quite rare to find that.
Yeah, it is. It is, I think, you know, it's more of a consumer's market, isn't it now? So if because it just doesn't make sense if you have to pay £5 just to open a bottle of wine for your guests to enjoy.
Bex, what was the cost that you got recently for the Club Cool Kid? I just couldn't believe it. I was with you at the time.
75 quid a bottle.
My
I was with you when she said it. I was like, what?
Yeah. Wow. Was this at a very high-end exclusive venue?
Yeah, but like, not that high-end.
Oh, really? Gosh,
I didn't pay it.
Huh? No, did you not? You sneak it in?
I was just like, this is horrific. There is no way that anyone's paying that much. Like,
No, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's something that I find infuriating. I mean, not, you know, the markup on alcohol alone is so expensive, let alone all the corkage fees and things like that. So, right.
But actually, given that is one thing that you're unlikely to have to pay for having a marquee wedding, you will be much more likely to paying either an inflated cost per bottle of wine at a venue or at a hotel, or corkage if you're bringing your own in. So it is one of the benefits of having a marquee wedding. It's that flexibility to be able to use what you want from wherever you want to get it from.
Exactly. And then you can also have the option of having, you know, a bar company come in and do cocktails. You know, you can have that set up for a cash bar. There are all these things you can do. So you literally can have anything that you want. So if you want to do free wine throughout the wine complimentary for everybody in the day, and then you want to change it to a cash bar in the evening because you can't afford to fund it all day, you can do that. Like, there are the options there.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that's probably the best way of doing it. I'd feel a bit uncomfortable about charging my guests from the get-go, but giving them wine, you know, reception champagne and wine whilst they eat. And then when the party reception in the evening kicks in, charging them for cocktails, or maybe keeping, perhaps, you know, you keep beer as on tap, or you have a certain amount of wine that you can still offer. But then if they want something different, then charging for it. I think that's acceptable. I wouldn't feel about that.
I think that's very fair. I don't think I've ever been to a wedding ever where you've had to pay for the drinks during the day. But I've definitely been, the majority of weddings that I go to as a guest, you end up, they either have a tab and they give you a drinks token, and then you end up paying for your drinks later on in the evening. Rounding down, what are your top tips for couples who are deciding if a marquee is right for them? So what would be your, like, fire tips?
Ooh, my fire tips. Well, do you know what, actually? I would say, really, I don't know if I've got multiple tips, but what I find is I get quite a lot of emails from couples who say, we've set our heart on a marquee wedding, or I've been wanting to use one of your tents for years, or I think a marquee wedding, it's going to be more effort from you. It's going to need more thought. If you have got the time and the energy and the inclination to put into that, a marquee wedding's right for you. If you want something easy and uncomplicated, but not as individual, then a venue is right for you. I think if you really want it, then do it.
No, that sounds fair. Yeah. Right. So just to finish off, we would like to ask a couple of questions from our listeners.
Sure. Okay.
Number one, we touched on very, very lightly earlier, but any tips for marquee weddings in a parent's back garden?
Yes, most definitely. So, I would say that the putting up early is a really good one. It's just going to be less stressful for the parents, because their garden's going to be transforming into a venue before their eyes, which might be, you know, a little bit uncomfortable for them in some way, exciting in another. So putting up early means that if there's any things that need to be changed, because let's face it, things do go wrong sometimes, so it just gives you more time to put anything right or change anything if you've got an early build day. So I'd suggest going in on Wednesday or Thursday for a marquee. The other thing is, I think, you know, have a schedule. So create a schedule and or production list to keep your parents informed, so they know that at, you know, 1 o'clock on Friday they're going to have a toilet being delivered. This is where it's going. This is who's delivering it. Point of contact is this person. If it doesn't arrive, call this number, that sort of thing, just so they know what's going to be where. And perhaps limiting the amount of suppliers that are involved, and ensuring that there is a site visit and a bit of a rapport and relationship built up and trust, because it can be a stressful thing. So it just the more trust you have in the people that are going to be doing that for you, the better.
I was just going to say, we're going to be quite biased on this, but consider a marquee wedding is one of the situations where I would highly recommend a planner, even if it's just someone on the day that comes in and just sort of looks after everyone, maybe even the day before, because like you said, there are a lot more suppliers involved, so it has the potential to get a lot more stressful. So just having someone to help with that just sheer quantity of work, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Sometimes when we do a big build, and you know, we've perhaps got 8 crew on site for over 3 days, and then we look at the equipment list, and we notice that actually we've delivered 12 tons of equipment into that site. We go, oh right, okay, well that'll be why then.
Yeah.
I think scheduling and timelines is incredibly important for any wedding, even more so when you've got multiple suppliers building a venue. So make sure that from the very start of your planning, you start writing down your schedule as and when it comes in, because then you'll know and be able to refer back, and it will just make your life so much easier. Absolutely.
Yeah, and actually at Wonderland, when clients don't have a planner like you, then I actually send them a schedule, and like a list of the accommodation and where guests are going to be sleeping, and when things are going to be arriving. So in a template, so they just have to fill it in. So it helps to just remind them about things, and also to help me as well. Yeah, I love templates.
What is the cheapest yet most effective way to dress a marquee? So if you don't have tons of budget, what will make an impact? What elements can you do that will...
Well, I mean, I would say bunting. Now, I know bunting is a bit, you know, old school.
Don't underestimate bunting. No. Love a bit of bunting.
I mean, the thing with bunting is it's really cheap, and it's all you need is a ladder and some, you know, wire or string, and it will cover a lot of space in a marquee. Yeah. You can also get something that's a little bit more modern, which are the tassel garlands. I think they came in from the US, but they're a bit like bunting, i.e. they're on strings and they dangle and you hang them, but they're a bit more current, if you like. So yeah, I'd say that's my top tip for least budget and the highest impact.
Bunting has come a long way. You get like pom-pom bunting and tassel bunting and glitter things all now. So there are it's not just the standard like little triangle cutter. You can get that if you want that traditional rustic look. But there are different types of things that you can do.
That's very true. And the other great thing is that you can hire it as well for very inexpensive, because I've had clients before that have thought, oh, brilliant, I'll make my bunting. And then they realise after the seventh weekend that they're there cutting and stitching, actually it takes quite a lot of effort. And
DIY weddings.
Yes.
DIY weddings can take a lot of time. Like I tried to do a tassel garden once and it was not as easy as I thought going to be.
No, but you can
even get faux flower garlands now. You can just buy them by the meter, can't you? And they've got like little dangly stems with flowers on. So there's so much you can do.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Yeah.
What are the advantages to having a marquee wedding compared to a venue? Which I think we've covered with flexibility, but is there anything else?
Yeah, it is. It's really creative control and individuality, I would say, that you're getting for that. And the feeling, because I mean, I'm quite sensitive to atmospheres and energies, and when I walk into a space, I can sort of feel the energy of it. And I always find with hotels that they just feel like somebody else's space, whereas you really can make a marquee feel like your own, which is, I think personally, that's what you'd want on the day where you're setting down the your sort of manifesto for the rest of your life with another person. You want it to feel like your own space and for people to come into it and your friends and family to feel like yours. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Perfectly explained, Catherine. Oh,
good.
And the last question we have is it generally cheaper to host a wedding in a marquee compared to a venue? I think it's quite a hard question.
It is, but I would actually say no, it is generally not, because I drive past hotels that say, you know, 100 people wedding package, £5,000, and I think, blimey, that's good.
What are you getting for that?
Well, it includes the Prosecco and the food too. And I think, blimey, that probably would cover the cost of the actual structure if we were going to do a marquee wedding for 100 people. So it is cheaper to have a venue.
Sorry. It's reality. Like, obviously, you can find very cost-effective venues now that do have packages because, you know, they're able to do, like, 5 in a week, you know, there's all those kind of things to factor in, you know. With a marquee, like you said, a lot of places who offer the space only allow maybe 6 spaces a year because they're not a permanent venue, you know, haven't got a license for that. So there's all these things to factor in when you're looking for marquee space.
Yeah, that's right. And actually, perhaps, so going back to the other question you just asked about the advantages, perhaps it's, maybe that's a pro and a con. I was going to say less stressful, because one thing I do find when we work at venues who are what I would say conveyor belt venues, where you literally have an afternoon to put the marquee up, and we generally work into the night in order to get it done, because the last lot have cleared out that morning, and then the next one's the next day. It can be quite stressful when you're sort of watching the last of the guests depart as you arrive, and it can be, you don't really feel like you've got very much time to just sort of be with it. And I think that is another benefit of a marquee wedding, that you do have more appreciation time.
Perfect. I completely agree. Well, thank you so much.
My pleasure. No, my pleasure. It's been great. It's been great. I think it's a really good topic.
How do they contact you? What would be the best form? Would it be email?
Email. Yeah, email. Yeah. I don't mind sharing my advice or contacts, so they're more than welcome to email me.
So it's Catherine with a K at...
Yep. Arabian Tents.
Oh, Arabian Tents.
Yeah, or ArabianTents.com. I've had Arabian Tents for longer. So the thing is that Arabian Tents was the original thing I set up. And then because we have Pearl Tents and another one called Complete Chill Out, it was it just makes sense to have an umbrella that holds it all together. So that's House of HUD.
So it will be Catherine with a K at ArabianTents.com. And we will be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Real. You've been
so
Thank you so much.
Pleasure. All right, lovely to talk to you.
We'll speak to you soon.
Thank you for listening to the Wedding People podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a review. And don't forget, you can always get in touch via the details on our show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we hope you can tune in to our next episode.